I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this January 5th. In this month's National Geographic, a story that will inspire you to get closer to nature. It's titled, This Is Your Brain on Nature. When we get closer to nature, be it untouched wilderness or a backyard tree, we do our overstressed brains a favor. We have the author of the article with us today, and we also have someone who led her on a three-day camping trip in the Wild Canyons near Bluff, Utah, explaining the three-day effect to 22 psychology students and our guest. And it's fascinating what happens after 3 days of wilderness backpacking, but she also looks at what's going on in various parts of the world, including some remarkable things in South Korea. You'll hear more about that as we talk this hour. We have two guests with us. Florence Williams is a contributing editor at Outside Magazine, a freelance writer for the New York Times, New York Times Magazine, New York Review of Books, Slate, Mother Jones, High Country News, Bicycling, Oprah, and many other publications. And of course, this one appears, that the one we're talking about, is in National Geographic. And it's going to be part of a larger story, in fact, a book that's going to be published in 2017. Florence, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, our great pleasure. Also joining us is Professor David Strayer. He's a professor at the University of Utah's Department of Psychology. He studies cognition and nature, among other research interests, and he is an avid wilderness backpacker. And we thank you so much, David, for being with us. Hi.
Hi, it's my pleasure.
Yeah. Well, let's start, Florence, with your going on this, and we'll tell David what he tries to accomplish here. You've been in various parts of the world for this very interesting, beautifully photographed story, but this three-day camping trip in the Wild Canyons near Bluff, Utah. How was that? What did you do?
It was wonderful. One thing I've noticed while researching this topic is that there seems to be a little bit of a dose effect. A little bit of nature really helps improve our mood, make us have less negative thoughts, might sort of perk us up. But that the more time we spend in nature, more profound things seem to happen. And so I really wanted to, see what that felt like, spend a longer time away from technology, away from sort of daily cares, and in an incredibly profound, beautiful landscape, just to sort of see how it felt in my brain. And then along with Dr. Strayer, sort of, figure out what was really going on.
Mm-hmm. And you actually had your brain kind of wired to this machine so you could figure out what was actually going on, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And, Dr. Strayer could talk more specifically about what he did and what he saw, but we were looking at, how different parts of the brain are activated. Of course, everything you do kind of affects the blood flow in your brain. But, was there something unique about what was going on when we spend a lot of time, away from an urban environment, away from our work environment, and in a beautiful place?
Mm-hmm. Dr. Strayer, what does modern life do to us?
What does being in nature do to us?
No, what does being in modern life do to us? Cell phones in cities and the way we live.
Well, it tends to overstress prefrontal cortex. We're constantly switching attention from one thing to another. The cell phone is kind of a medium that basically just pulls attention left, right, and center. And that's, in the long run, not overly healthy for us. It tends to degrade the quality of our thinking. It tends to stress us out. And there are both short-term and long-term consequences from constantly being tethered to the network.
Mm-hmm. So you take, I imagine you do this fairly regularly, you took the author and 22 psychology students for 3 days to these wild canyons. What's magical about 3 days?
It comes from a lot of people's introspections to start with, that people say that after 2 or 3 days, they start to really think differently. They tend to notice notice things, sounds, smells, different things. You're more connected with the physical environment. A lot of the stresses and the daily grind that comes with that communication with the cell phone fade away. When we've actually done studies to see what happens mentally, we see that there's a burst in creativity, that that kind of the space for being able to think creatively is expanded. And one of the reasons we put electrodes on Florence and a lot of the other students was to try and understand something about what's happening in the brain that's underlying that kind of that magical experience of kind of being out unplugged.
Mm-hmm. And Florence, you cite in your article studies that have been done all over the world, in England and in the Netherlands, and we'll talk about South Korea in a moment, but so many studies show that all of these diseases that we are prone to, depression, anxiety, heart disease, diabetes, asthma, migraines, in people who live near green spaces or are in green spaces, a really markedly lower incidence of those diseases.
Yeah, that's right. And I think it was a surprise for some of the researchers who worked on this. There was a researcher in England who told me that he expected to see maybe some effects because of exercise. You know, that if people live near parks, you know, they exercise more. And, of course, we know a lot. There's a lot of research about how exercise is, of course, really great for us. It's great for us cognitively. It's great for us mentally. But then he found out that actually people weren't necessarily using the parks, and they weren't necessarily walking or running in them. But just the proximity of maybe even looking at the parks or even having trees out your window, something about that seem to really alter people's stress levels, even just a little bit. And that little bit translated to these pretty big health effects in terms of lowered mortality. You know, we know that stress does cause health problems, or can cause health problems. And in these populations, they were a little bit healthier when they lived closer to green space.
Mm-hmm. Even in prisons, right?
Yes, in prison, there have been some interesting studies. Some are still ongoing, looking at the effects of, for example, farms or views. Or in one case, in Oregon, there's a prison that is showing nature videos in an exercise room in the prison. And one part of the prison is using these nature videos, and another part of the prison isn't. And the prisoners who are looking at these nature videos while they exercise, while they work out, mostly on weight machines, they're exhibiting less violent behavior. They're not sort of shouting as much. They're calmer. And this is based on sort of questionnaires. It's also based on interviews with the wardens and the guards, who say that they really noticed the change.
Interesting. Dr. Strayer, I know one of your special interests is attention. How does our attention change, and what do we pay attention to when we're in a place like the Wild Canyons?
So what we think is that the brain has a number of different attentional networks. There's one that is really good at multitasking and concentrating and switching from one activity to another. That's part of the prefrontal cortex. But it tends to be the part that gets overused. And if you overuse it, just like you overuse a muscle, then you can't use it for other creative things. And that's the same part of the brain that's responsible for creative thinking and problem solving and so forth. And we think that when you go into nature, another part of the attentional network that has the label default mode, or the default network, tends to be increased in terms of its regulation. And so you see that there seems to be a connection between the physical natural environment and these different attentional networks that are kind of supported in higher level cognition in humans.
What do you look at when you're in the canyon? What do you pay attention to?
Well, basically everything that's in there, you become just more attuned to nature. We found that, and a lot of people have found that water, flowing water, tends to be something that's very restorative. That's one of the reasons why you see a lot of people have water features in their gardens or maybe in their house. When we did our studies measuring brain activity with Florence, they were the participants were sitting right next to a flowing river that had these absolutely stunning vistas. And so it's the whole visual experience. And, you know, what we're seeing is that there does seem to be a connection between the neural activity in the different parts of the brain and the physical environment you're in. It's not just being outdoors, because if we record the same kind of, take these same kinds of measurements when people are outdoors, but say looking at a parking lot that has moving objects, that's not restorative. It's something about being in an immersive natural environment that seems to really have the real beneficial effects.
Mm-hmm. There are so many beautiful pictures, as always, in National Geographic, but I frequently drive around town and think, isn't it amazing how much concrete there is, Florence, everywhere? And there's this picture of this gorgeous hotel in Singapore, I believe it is, filled with all of these beautiful trees, and the trees are kind of overlapping the street outside, with the idea that you shouldn't have a concrete jungle.
It's true. Singapore was amazing. In some ways, I think it's sort of our future, because it's an incredibly high-density city. Millions of people living in a small space. Most of them live in these very tall, high-rise apartment buildings that are close together. And you could think this is just, you know, kind of an urban hell. But, you know, it was kind of visionary. Singapore has placed tremendous value on parks, on green space, on incorporating green design into both urban planning and architecture itself. And, of course, Singapore, you know, is really lush. It's in the tropics. Things grow quickly. And so if you decide to put a lot of plants on the side of the building, they actually will survive and keep growing.
Right.
But I thought it was visually so incredible, you know, to see some of these buildings that have green living walls. And it makes you a little bit more, I think, optimistic about what our future urban existence will look like.
You talk about, and let's contrast it with the kindergartners in Switzerland, but you talk about the number of minutes that we spend outside and the number of minutes that children spend outside in this country, and it's pretty low.
It's pretty appalling. It's not just time outside, but it's even time exercising or being active. When you look at what our preschoolers and elementary schoolers sort of do during the day, and some researchers have looked at this, you know, they spend less than 10% of their time outside. Some of them, even these preschoolers, you know, who are just sort of built to move and explore, you know, they're getting less than, you know, at 40 minutes or less than an hour of actual activity movement a day. It's just, you know, kind of outrageous when you think that we are a species, you know, that has really evolved to move around and explore. And so what's so fascinating about the nature kindergartens is that these kids spend all their hours of class outside. And at first I thought, well, how can they want to do that all day long? You know, aren't they going to get cold? Aren't they going to get muddy? Don't they get tired of being outside? But I really came around by the end of my visits to these schools, because the kids are so engaged, they're happy, they're really doing what kids are supposed to do, and because of that, their brains are exploding. You know, they're learning how to solve their own problems, they're learning how to get along with each other, they're inventing play for themselves. It actually made me very sad and disappointed, you know, for the kids who don't have that experience.
Right.
Or forced into these classrooms, you know, today.
Perhaps it makes you think, Dr. Sayer, that all of your classes should be held in the wild canyons.
You know, there's a tremendous benefit. I will just say the social, emotional, cognitive growth in the students when they are taken into the desert and they don't have, they can't plug into their computers and cell phones is transformational. Most of the students come back saying it was the most educational, informative experience of their life, and it's just a shame that we haven't harnessed the wonderful nature into our curriculum, but instead tend to be shutting it out, as Florence mentioned. There's opportunities to really have relatively low cost but huge impact in terms of improving the quality and creativity of our students.
I bet it's hard, though, for those of us who have left our cell phones at home and don't have them with us. We're thinking, oh, I'm kind of missing something today. Weren't they a little bit fidgety and anxious, at least at the beginning, for not having their cell phones with them?
Oh, it starts off with a bit of anxiety. They're some of the most connected citizens in the United States, right? College students have social media and everything like that. So there's initial anxiety. It goes away after about 4 or 5 hours, and after they've been out for 3 or 4 days, then they actually start to dread coming back onto the network because
really?
They realize what they've missed.
Florence, how about you? You're from D.C. You're a journalist. You have that cell phone going a lot, I'll bet.
I do, and I probably fall into that category of feeling a little anxious, you know, at first if I can't find out who's trying to text me or email me.
Right.
But the amazing thing is, you know, as Dr. Strayer was saying, after, you know, a day, I didn't miss it at all. In fact, it just seemed like I never even had a cell phone. you sort of move into this alternate reality, and you do dread it. You do dread coming back to it because you know it's just this kind of assault, right, of the senses and perceptual senses as soon as you get back.
We're going to welcome phone calls for both our guests. I hope some of you have had a chance to read the article and see the extraordinary pictures of people all over the world experiencing nature, some in very, very dramatic form. It's a story that captured our attention, and I'm sure it will yours as well if you haven't seen it. This is Your Brain on Nature. When we get closer to nature, be it untouched wilderness or a backyard tree, we do our overstressed brains a favor. We have two guests with us, Florence Williams. This story is going to be part of a larger book that will be out in 2017. She is the author of the piece, and she writes for a number of prominent publications. And also joining us is Dr. David Strayer, a professor at the University of Utah's Department of Psychology. He studies cognition and nature and attention, and he took Florence and 22 psychology students to this canyon in Utah for 3 days and found that once we slow down, we take in beautiful natural surroundings, we feel restored, and also our mental performance improves. For people who have had difficult problems in life, firefighters in South Korea are taken to this healing forest in South Korea, and South Korea is building all kinds of healing forests. They're remarkable. Our guest was there, and we'll talk about that, and we'll welcome your phone calls. We're not spending very much time in nature. Do we need to spend more? What happens to you when you go to nature? Do you feel that you take walks in your neighborhood and look at trees? Does that restore you? Do you have to go far from home to get this experience? What is your experience like? Is it just part of how we're wired because that's where we came from? We came from the forests and we didn't come from urban places with lots of concrete many, many years ago. We'll also look at the visionaries, people who have given us these parks, our national parks, who've given us parks in cities, who had this idea that it was good for our health. And now scientific studies are proving that indeed that is the case. Profound benefits for our hearts and our minds and everything. Well, let's hear from you. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Our Facebook page, where we love to read your comments, is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our phone number for you to join this conversation is 800-486-8655. Before we go to phones, though, I do want you, Florence, to talk about your experience in South Korea, which just sounds extraordinary what they're doing.
It really was. South Korea has a long tradition of, you know, a culture that's connected to nature, although they're certainly a, you know, very first world, very, you know, capitalistic driven, hardworking society, but it kind of makes sense that when they get stressed, they turn to nature, which is not something necessarily Americans do. And so the government decided that because so many South Koreans were so stressed out, that they would designate a number, actually 37, of these healing forests, which are, you know, on their national forest lands. So they've put in trails, and they have actually a whole sort of legion of healing rangers. And they lead programs for the populace in things like cancer recovery, prenatal stress reduction, recovery from post-traumatic stress disorder. That's the firefighters that you mentioned. So the citizens really go out and they use these forests and these trails, and I guess, you know, they just love it.
Do we do anything similar other than what your class is doing? Are you seeing such movement, Dr. Strayer, in the United States as well?
You know, other than the fact that you look at a lot of cities, and one of the most valuable things that the cities have are their parks where people can recreate. I mean,
right.
Look at New York City and Central Park. It's something that it's of utmost value. It makes our cities more livable. So even if we don't explicitly articulate why it's important, we nevertheless gravitate towards the parks. We recreate in them. We look at them. They make us healthier.
Mm-hmm. And name some of the people in history who were so important in giving us some of those parks and what their thoughts were about the benefits of parks, Florence.
Sure. You know, John Muir, he was a Scotsman who moved here as a child, actually to Wisconsin. He attended the University of Wisconsin for a while. He was a tremendous proponent of setting aside wild lands for the benefit of people. And he did recognize that this is an important thing to do, not just to protect scenery and protect the landscape, but actually to ensure human health, because he felt that wilderness was critical to sort of people becoming their best human selves. And he wrote very eloquently about that. He specifically concentrated on Yosemite, which was first a state park and then eventually became, I think, the second park in the national park system. Yellowstone was the first. And also Frederick Law Olmsted, the creator of Central Park, was a tremendous proponent of setting aside Yosemite. And he wrote a letter to the California delegation saying, we need to do this because science has proven that beautiful scenery is important for human cognition and creativity. So he was really ahead of the curve. He sort of predated even, you know, what Strayer is proving out now.
Mm-hmm. He also designs Lake Park here in Milwaukee, and you think about how important it is. This city has done wonderful things with the lakefront, meaning that they haven't put huge high-rises right on the lakefront. And Lake Park, designed by him, Olmsted as well, is really beautiful. It could be filled with mansions, and it's this beautiful park.
Well, that's right. And I think Olmsted especially recognized that wealthy people always had access to nature and to beautiful green spaces, and they loved it. But what about the rest of us, you know? The parks were really important for everybody and for the health of populations at large.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very democratic idea. And, you know, to our credit, I mean, America really ran with this idea, created the National Park Service, exactly 100 years ago, and has now exported that, you know, brilliant idea all over the world.
Let's go to phone calls. Our number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Chris in Wisconsin Dells, hi.
Hi, I'm living out in the woods, and I'm enjoying every moment of it. You should all move. I had a professor at UWM who used to take a bunch of kids up into the Boundary Waters. His name is Tom Utek, and I know that he's listening, and you should all look up his paintings. But that's not why I called. I called because of Albert Bierstadt, who is a Wisconsinite. When they wanted to put together the national park system, there were no cameras available, no digital cameras available. They had to have all these landscape painters go out and paint vistas of places. This is an excuse for my making an excuse for painters. And they put these paintings in front of the Congress, and the Congress made the National Park System on behalf of the painters who painted the paintings.
Thank you, Chris, so much for your call. Florence, would you like to respond?
Yeah, I think Bierstadt really, in some ways, was National Geographic before there was National Geographic. He painted these very romantic images of landscape, and I think it did have a tremendous impression on Eastern legislators and on the population who then, you know, came out in droves to visit the West.
Would both of you ideally, I'm not sure, Dr. Strayer, where you live, I assume, Florence, that you live in a city kind of atmosphere, would both of you like to be living in the woods somewhere? Would it be healthier for you too, Dr. Strayer?
Well, I actually really am lucky because where I live, it's a 5-minute walk to some of the basically wilderness.
So
I actually am spoiled in the sense that I live in a city, and it's a nice city, but it's a 5-minute walk into wilderness where there's all the everything that you'd have in wilderness. So it's a beautiful mix of both.
So how often do you go into the wilderness?
Well, probably like 3 days out of the week at least that mm-hmm. I want, and then actually I'll take more longer excursions where I'm completely disconnected into the Utah deserts for maybe a week here and
Ooh.
A week there.
Florence, how about you?
I think it's important to put in a good word for cities, for health also. You know, cities are places of great health care. They're places of great cultural institutions.
Sure.
You know, they're great for our brains in a lot of ways. But I also think that we need to make cities more livable for more people. You know, again, the sort of nice neighborhoods. You know, I live in northwestern D.C. There are lots of trees on my street. I'm very lucky that way. There are parks near me. But there are parts of the city that don't have any trees. And, in fact, it's really interesting. You can see poverty from space. Because you can look at a city like D.C. and you can see where the trees are and where the trees aren't. And there's a real you know, poverty line right there. And so now that we know that nature is really necessary for health and for mental health, I think it's really important that you know, we take parks more seriously, we take planning more seriously, and we really, you know, advocate that our cities do better parks planning.
What was the figure in the article that being able to live close to a park and see green and be in green is worth something like a $20,000 raise?
Yeah, that's really interesting. You know, people who have more money earn more money, are healthier. That's well known. And some researchers looked at the city of Toronto, and they overlaid maps of health and trees. So they looked at the streets that had more trees, and they saw what kinds of illnesses people had. And regardless of your income, people who lived on streets with more trees were healthier people. And that boost in health was equivalent to a $20,000 gain in income.
Isn't that something? Let's go to Eugene in Viola. Hi, Eugene.
Well, good afternoon, Kathleen, and to your guests. I grew up right after World War II, and I walked a mile and a half to a one-room country school for 8 years. From late spring in the spring and the fall, we'd play pump, pump, pull away, and play slow pitch. In wintertime, we played fox and goose and had snowball fights. And the teachers that we had never let us stay inside. And two things I remember: one was the lack of disease, and nobody was overweight. The weight problem we didn't have. Well, I'm in my 70s right now, and I just got done loading, going up the Amish up here and getting a load of wood. But I've stayed on a good diet, and I've gotten out, and I've gotten my exercise. And that pays off.
It sure does. What, Doctor, you want to respond?
Oh, there's no doubt about it that there's a huge benefit in being both physically active and also being out in natural environments. It helps us physically. It helps us. It helps our bodies. It helps our brains. It makes us more creative. And it's unfortunate that you're seeing a trend just in the opposite direction. If you look at the trend lines, we're spending less time in nature, and it's almost the correlation's almost inverse with how much time we spend in front of a screen. Instead of being out in nature, we're sitting in front of a computer or some kind of a screen, and that makes us sedentary and tends to overstress the wrong parts of the attentional network.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure if you compare the obesity rates among children, Florence, between now and, say, 1955, it would be dramatic.
Oh, sure. That's tremendous. And in fact, many of the diseases, the chronic diseases that we think of as being kind of diseases of modern life, things like obesity, diabetes, heart disease, these are, another way to look at them are that they're diseases of indoor life. And I had a scientist sort of point that out to me, and I thought that was really interesting. It's not just modern life, it's modern life inside. When we're inside, we're lonelier, we're less connected to the people around us, there's more depression, there's more anxiety, and then, of course, you have the physical problems of not moving around.
Right. Thanks, Eugene. Always nice to hear from you. Dennis is next. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. I just wish everybody could get away from the city on a cold January night, on a clear night, and see all the stars they miss from the lights of the city. It's just beautiful. It'll take your breath away, and it makes you realize what a tiny speck you are in the universe.
Isn't that the truth? And they do seem to be so bright at this time of year, don't they?
Oh, they are. January, December, it is absolutely beautiful.
Yes.
And you can get out at night on snowshoes and go through the woods. It's another beautiful thing.
You're a happy guy, Dennis.
It's good. Very relaxing.
That sounds delightful. It makes you makes it okay to weather the cold, right, Dr. Strayer?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, luckily, when we go down, it's light pollution, among other things, and the quality of the air that has an effect on what you see in the stars. So we don't have to go down in the super cold. The deserts in Utah that don't have the light pollution have that same magical experience at 60 degrees in the summer. But it's absolutely stunning to see the Milky Way and all the stars. And when you get back into the city, you see two or three, maybe a half dozen stars in the sky. It's almost like not the same sky.
Mm-hmm. So what does the research show us, Dr. Strayer, of how often do we all need to go on these three-day wilderness in the canyon or someplace experiences to really get the benefits of being with nature? Or can you do 15 minutes a day, or do you have to do an hour a day, or what does the research show?
I think the research is basically showing that you don't have to be out for 3 days to get the benefits. There clearly is a dose response, and so that kind of real magical experience of being out in 3 days is something that if you have the luxury to do it, I strongly encourage it. But if you don't have that, a short walk in a natural setting, in an arboretum, in a park, where you can experience nature, even what the studies have shown that 20, 30 minutes in that kind of environment, when you leave your phone aside, will really lead to kind of a lot of improvements in thinking. I will say that our research shows that if you are in that same environment, but you're holding a phone and talking, that you negate most of the benefits.
Oh, interesting. Florence, have you changed how you interact with nature as a result of this article and now subsequent book?
I have changed. I try to go for a walk actually every day in a city park. I have a dog, and she gets me out. And I find if I don't do that, I really am I'm in a worse mood. I'm a little bit grumpier. I think part of it is the exercise, but it's also just having a little bit of time away from the burdens of the day and giving your brain a little bit of a breather.
And I'll bet your doggie's happier, too.
Oh, my dog's very happy.
I'm sure.
I also, by the way, I agree with Dr. Strayer. I do think these wilderness forays are also really important. But I think it gets to a different part of your health. I think when you go into nature for many days, you are able to think about the big picture of your life. You know, sort of what are your hopes and dreams? What are the problems you're trying to solve? What are the things about your spirituality that you want to figure out? That's what these longer trips really afford. And I know we've all seen it. We've read it. You know, we've read books like Cheryl Strayed's Wild, where she is dealing with grief and she is really transformed by her time in wilderness. And there's a long tradition, certainly in literature, of people transformed by time in wilderness. And I think it's important to remember that.
Mm-hmm. You know what looked like a lot of fun was this mud bath. Did you have one of those? That looks like so much fun.
No, I didn't have a mud bath, but I was really struck by the research, especially in Japan, about all the senses and the importance of kind of using all the senses. And that's one thing that time in nature affords us. You know, when we're sitting at a desk or at our office, we're really just using our eyes and maybe our ears. But when we go into the woods, all of our senses perk up. We feel the breeze on our face, or maybe we feel the mud. And people in Japan told me that they like to, smell the bark, and they like to smell the pine needles. They really make an effort to kind of bathe in all their senses in the forest. And
mm-hmm.
Terrific for our nervous system.
Mm-hmm. And those senses, Dr. Strayer, become more acute as the longer we're in nature, don't they?
Yeah, that's one of the things that seems to happen is maybe in the urban environment we our senses become a little dulled, possibly through overstimulation. But when you're in natural environments, everybody, when we bring people out, they talk about just noticing sounds, hearing sounds that they didn't notice at first, or smelling something, or being more connected to the physical environment. And I think that's a real part of it, is that we just kind of recalibrate and be just much more connected to just the physical environment that we're now in. That's kind of something that is consistent with our evolutionary history.
Dennis, thank you so much for the reminder about the bright stars in January. They are worth seeing every night. Leslie sent this message. She said there's nothing she valued more growing up than living next to a forest. She was a tomboy, and the woods were where she grew up and found happiness. I think there is some happiness to be found in these excursions. Do you think?
I do. I think that not everybody is going to love going into a forest. And I thought that was a surprising and interesting thing that I learned in the research, that there seems to be a small subgroup of people who just no matter what, you know, can't deal with the bugs or the rain or the anxiety of being outside. And I think that's really sad. And it's probably a testament to the fact that they really didn't get outside into nature as children.
Mm-hmm.
Which kind of brings home the message to me that it's important for children to feel comfortable in nature. And as we, you know, sort of move onward into this highly technological future, we're going to have to make a bigger effort, I think, to get kids outside and to get them comfortable in that environment, because it will provide for them a lifetime of, you know, resilience and recovery.
Isn't that amazing that we are becoming afraid of the outside? I mean, who would have thought that would ever happen? It's the outside, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, but it can be scary. I mean, I think that's the problem, is that initially, if you're not familiar with it, and you don't know how to, and you haven't learned how to kind of be in natural environments, then it's just, that's a foreign entity, and it can be very stressful. So I completely agree with Florence that it's good to get kids exposed to being outdoors early and often. That's going to help them in both their physical and their mental health.
And Dr. Strayer, what do we need to be aware of? What do kids need to know?
Well, I mean, I think it's actually, if you look at a lot of the programs like scouting and so forth, they take kids out and tell them how to be resilient, how to be able to kind of navigate, and if they get temporarily lost, how to recover from that. If they get a be bitten or something like that, how to deal with it. You know, it doesn't have to. When people have looked to see what are the benefits of restoration, you find it even when you're out in a rainy day, when you think, hey, this isn't as nice as it could be, but the mental benefits, the cognitive benefits are there, even if it's not the most ideal of conditions.
We're going to welcome more phone calls, and we'll do that in just a moment. We're talking about being in nature and looking at the article that's in the current issue, which actually is devoted to the power of parks. It's a year-long National Geographic celebration of our common ground. And it's a wonderful article with extraordinary pictures about your brain on nature. That's the title of the article. When we get closer to nature, be it untouched wilderness or a backyard tree, we do our overstressed brains a failure. And the author of the piece, one of our guests this hour, has looked at studies that have been done all over the world and has traveled all over the world to look at the effect of nature on our brains. Florence Williams, who wrote this article for National Geographic, and she's also a contributing editor at Outside Magazine, a freelance writer for the New York Times, New York Times Magazine, Review of Books, Slate, Mother Jones, High Country News, Oprah. Her first book, Breasts, A Natural and Unnatural History, received the LA Times Book Prize in Science and Technology, and her story in the National Geographic this month is going to be a book published in 2017. This is Your Brain on Nature. Dr. David Strayer is professor at the University of Utah's Department of Psychology, studies cognition and nature, among other research interests. Here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, back to phone calls, and we go to Bob next in Eau Claire. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you?
Fine, Bob.
Happy New Year.
And to you, too.
Yeah. Hey, I was a director for a residential environmental learning center in northern Minnesota for almost 30 years.
Mm.
And we would bring school groups. Well, we wouldn't bring them. They would arrive. They did all the heavy lifting of getting to the place. And once they were there, we would do all kinds of programs in the outdoors, both day and night. And one of the absolute favorite activities that we would do in wintertime especially was an activity called Alpha Wolf. And what they would do is they would be in small groups, each group supervised by an adult, so they were never without an adult. And sometimes the kids were sticking to the adults like glue.
Sure.
But at any rate, their job was to find Alpha Wolf. And they would all howl. And I don't know if you've ever heard fifth or sixth graders howl. They sound just like coyotes. And every once in a while, they would actually get a response from a pack of coyotes before Alpha responded to their howl. And they had no idea. They thought it was another group of kids. And so we'd have to clue them in on that. But we would do that sometimes at 10, 15, 20 below zero. And you know, we would say to the teachers, as long as the wind isn't blowing, it's not going to be bad. And sure enough, it wasn't bad, and the stars were absolutely spectacular. And we had so many evaluations returned to us over the years by teachers and by the kids themselves telling us that that was their absolute favorite activity because they overcame their fear of the dark in the woods.
Right.
And it was a marvelous experience.
Oh,
so
it sounds
I thought
like
I'd
it.
Bring that to your attention.
And where was it in Minnesota?
It was called Long Lake Conservation Center. And there are about seven or eight and there were called RELCs, or Residential Environmental Learning Centers. So each facility has got dormitories, dining facilities, classrooms, and an amount of land appropriate to taking, you know, a large school group outside and doing activities so that the kids weren't constantly bumping into one another. That they had a feeling of I'm the only one here,
mm-hmm.
or my class is right. The only one here.
Oh, thank you, Bob, so much. It sounds wonderful, Florence, doesn't it?
It does. I'm a huge proponent of outdoor education, environmental education for children, and I'm also a huge proponent of summer camps. I think those are becoming even more important as our children become more plugged in to devices. I send both of my kids off for a couple of weeks in the summer, and they're not allowed to bring any cell phones or computers. It's really the only time our kids get unplugged for any length of time. And I see that they come back, and I see them, you know, kind of transformed. They don't miss their devices. They appreciate the time away from them. And I think they start to value being with each other, being with other kids face-to-face. They're learning more social skills. You know, these are things that really our kids are so challenged by overall with modern life.
Thank you, Bob, so much for your call. Joe in Oshkosh, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. Long-time listener.
Thanks, Joe.
As I told the gentleman that answered the phone, I was born and raised in New York City, South Bronx, East Pacific, the furthest thing from nature.
Mm-hmm.
And at 39, my father suffered three major heart attacks.
Oh.
And they gave him a year to live. He said, well, if I'm going to die, I'm going to die where I was born. And he moved to the western coast of Puerto Rico, which I had never been to.
Oh.
I got to see it after my stint in the military. I thought I died and went to heaven. There were six homes in this side of this mountain that you can see the ocean, and he lasted almost 15 years beyond the year that they gave him. It was nature. He got into a garden. He got into chickens, rabbits. He would walk his grandson every day. And unfortunately, if he had quit smoking, he probably would have lasted longer. But the few times that I've been to Puerto Rico, I'm a year from retirement, and I just can't wait to get away from the big city, get away from work, and get to that nature that I didn't know was part of my culture.
Oh, Joe, that's so wonderful. Professor, Dr. Strayer, you want to respond to that?
I mean, I think it just speaks to the sense in which we really are inherently connected to natural environments, and when we can get back into that kind of a space, we see that there's benefits in terms of the physical health and the mental health, and that the opposite, unfortunately, is true, that if we're constantly sitting in front of a computer or in an urban commute and all those things like that, that it's kind of it's a heavy stressor. And so it's not at all surprising to me that you see somebody when they get a chance to go back and kind of unplug and be more in natural environments, that they're going to their quality of life is going to improve. Both the quality and the quantity of life is going to improve.
Are you surprised, or have you heard similar stories and done research that he was able to extend his life by 15 years?
I mean, just reducing the stress. I mean, we know that stress is a major contributor to cardiovascular disease and other kinds of health consequences, and to the extent that you can actually move from a setting where there's kind of more of high stress, kind of temporal pressures and everything like that, into something where you're connected to green space, that's consistent with quite a large literature. I mean, Florence clearly articulates some of that in her article, but there's more and more research saying that being close to natural environments, to trees and so forth, improves the health. You recover from surgery faster if you have a window that looks out into natural environments. We're trying to understand why, but the fact that you do get these health benefits is really well documented.
Thank you so much, Joe, for your call. John in Richland Center. Hi.
Hi. Great show. I started out in the concrete jungle of Milwaukee. I spent 10 years in the research lab of General Electric World Headquarters designing and engineering MRI scanners. I bought some land in Richland County. I built a log cabin out of solid oak logs. I lived out there for 2 years off the grid.
Oh.
And you can hear the coyotes calling, the deer snorting. One morning I got up and had my cup of coffee, and there was 5 deer licking the salt off an old stump.
Oh.
It was absolutely wonderful.
Mm. And where are you living now, back in the city?
No, I'm still in Richland County.
Oh, you are? Are you still in the cabin?
No, it's up the road from me. I moved into Boaz, where I have electricity.
Uh-huh. That's always good. There is something tempting about getting totally off the grid. I wonder how many of us would be able to take it and for how long we would be able to take it. Do you have any desire to do that, Florence?
I do. I would love to do it for a while. I crave it. I think that we are so fortunate that we live in a country that has set aside wilderness areas and that we do have the opportunity to go out and explore them. And I would encourage us all to do it as much as we can.
Dr. Strayer?
Well, one of the things I was thinking about with your caller was if he was working on some of the MRI technology, that's the very technology that's allowing us to peer inside the brains. And one of the things we're learning is that when you go into nature, you see these different attentional networks that are restored when you're in natural environments. It's the same kinds of brain activity you see when people meditate or in some kind of mind-wandering states. There's a healthy part of us just kind of like being in the moment without constantly multitasking. And so I think that it's kind of interesting that your caller was actually helping in some of the technology that allows us to be able to study this. But, yeah, I mean, I do try and go out into natural environments. And I think that the one of the caveats I think we've learned is that even though technology is wonderful, if you bring too much technology into nature, nature is not nature anymore.
Yes, how true. Thank you both so much for being with us. Thanks for doing the article. It's really interesting, and the pictures, of course, are gorgeous. And thanks for all of your research. Florence, thank you. Dr. Strayer, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
Our pleasure. And it's the current issue of National Geographic. The cover story is The Power of Parks, a year-long celebration of our common ground. This article is This is Your Brain on Nature. When we get closer to nature, be it untouched wilderness or a backyard tree, we do our overstressed brains a favor. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this interesting hour, and thanks to Scotty as well for his on-air production here in downtown Milwaukee. But we are very close to big, beautiful Lake Michigan.